We continue on the Amateur Hour podcast with our mock draft. We are at the number 2 pick now. I'm Brian Gibberman, here with Sam Vecini. The Minnesota Timberwolves took Karl-Anthony Towns out of Kentucky at number 1. So now we move on to the Lakers. Andrew Ungvari from LakersNation.com. I think I got that right, right?
Yep. That's where you're amongst a few other places. But yeah, mostly Lakers-related stuff. Yeah, sure.
All right, so I guess there's some, first off, there's some big news that just came down about the Lakers that we should probably discuss. Do you think Kobe Bryant is happy that his general manager is revealing that this might be his last season?
I don't think he minds, but Kobe's changed his answer every time he's asked the question. And I think that in Mitch's mind, he hasn't ever changed his answer, because I think the Lakers plan to move on without Kobe, at least as a $8 million salary, eight-figure salary. I can't see the Lakers being willing to keep him around if he's going to take up a significant percentage of the cap after next season. But I'm sure they would find a way to fit him in if he was willing to take a significant pay cut going forward. So I think they're what you hear Mitch saying is, I believe this is his last season. That's what he told me. And then in parentheses, you should say, one time when we spoke about it, but instead he just keeps repeating that as if to say, well, you know, we can have that, that was the other thing he said. He said, you know, if it's going to continue after that, we can have that discussion a year from now, which is his way of saying, well, we're moving on with this plan, and if you can figure out a way to fit into that plan, we'd love to keep you here. We'd love for you to retire as a Laker, but if it doesn't make sense for what you are looking for financially or as far as maybe his role is concerned, then maybe it's not going to finish in LA with the Lakers. And that's what I get, because, you know, then if you look at the other quote, is he said, you know, anybody that wants to come here and doesn't share those same wills as Kobe and need for a championship and willing to put in the work, we don't want that kind of player. So Mitch is doing a very good job of kind of letting it be known that I'm not going to tell you he's going to be here next year. I'm not going to tell you he's not. Implying that he probably won't be here after next season. But I don't want him to be offended, so I'm going to just compliment who he is as a player and say we don't want anybody to come here that doesn't want to play with somebody who shares those qualities. That's smart.
I think this is a really – that number one, screw you for jumping up and taking two. Like, you guys haven't had enough luck in the NBA thing, and the Knicks had to be the team that falls. That's first off.
Yeah, well, you know, who really lucked out was Philly.
Why?
Because they don't have the pressure now of having to worry about drafting one or two or a consensus big, you know, because that might be the best player that people think is. And then, so now they can take whoever they want of the other guys without having that pressure to, you know, to regret having not taken a big with the top two pick.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, they also got a little bit unlucky because they didn't get either yours or the Heat's pick. But you're right. I mean, this guy that's going to come into Philadelphia is going to have not diminished expectations, but his expectations will be fair, being the number 3 pick, not being a guy that the Sixers passed over Jahlil Okafor or Karl-Anthony Towns for. So I think that's fair that you're right. But let's shift to the Lakers, I guess, in that they're really just going to take whoever they see as the best player, right?
I think so, but at the same time, I think when you see a video of Mitch Kupchak popping champagne, and you look, they had champagne there before, they knew where they were going to be picking. I don't think the champagne was there for them to pop because they kept their pick. I think the champagne was there in case they got one of the top, maybe 3 picks, but I feel like it's definitely with 2 picks, because that says to me, we love these 2 guys, and if we end up with one of them, then we won regardless of whether we got 1 or 2. And, you know, that look of happiness looks like we got our guy. We just don't know which of these 2 guys we got, and that's just me guessing. I just can't – unless they're trying to see if anybody wants to engage in swapping picks and to see what's out there, I don't know why. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make sense for anybody to let it be known who you like, especially if Towns is the guy they want, you know, and they think that they can still get him, you know, whether he wants to scare away the T-Wolves or what. But yeah, I can't see them taking one of the guards. But I'm not gonna, you know, I'll let them play the game of pretending like everybody's on the table.
I think this is fascinating because look, in real draft, if say Minnesota takes Okafor and Towns is there, that Towns is a perfect fit next to Randall. But if it's Okafor who's there, you just do it and take the best player available. But if they're not planning on making a trade, and if they plan on building the team around Okafor and Randall, that's putting yourself in a position where you're playing a specific style. And is that the type of team that Mitch Kupchak wants to build? If he doesn't, that opens up some possibilities.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you look at Kupchak, and he's been through two rebuilds with this team, and the first one was when he was under Jerry West, after Magic Johnson retired. And if you look at what they did under West, they took the best player available because they had a ton of swingmen. I mean, sure, they drafted Eldon Campbell before Magic retired, and they drafted Vlade before Magic retired, but the majority of the guys that they drafted were just based on talent. So when you think about who was on the team before they signed Shaq and drafted Kobe, they were all, you know, other than George Lynch, but who was a three. So you're looking at Nick Van Exel, Doug Christie, George Lynch, Anthony Peeler. So it wasn't like they were drafting bigs. They were going after the best player available because they knew they needed assets. And when the time came to sign Shaq, they traded away Vlade. They kept Eldon, and because they'd re-signed him the year before, but ended up trading him, you know, a couple years later with Eddie Jones, who I had left off the list of guys they drafted. And none of those guys were on the championship team. All those great players that Jerry West drafted between, you know, 1990 and 1996 when they got Shaq and drafted Kobe, none of those guys were on their first championship team in 2000. But they were able to – a lot of those guys they lost, but they traded, you know, Vlade for Kobe. They traded Eldon Campbell and Eddie Jones for Glenn Rice. They traded George Lynch and Anthony Peeler for second-round picks because they needed to free up the cap space to sign Shaq. And then ended up leaving Doug Christie unprotected in the expansion draft, and your Knicks got him. I'm sorry, the Raptors got him, and then he ended up on the Knicks. And so it's funny, you know, they had all this talent, and they won 50-plus games. They beat Seattle in the first round of the playoffs before they ever got Shaq and Kobe. And none of those guys ended up playing for their first championship team in 2000 of this, you know, 21st century Lakers. And then if you look at the second rebuild of what Kupchak did, it started with the drafting of Bynum. The only guy that they could get to sign their mid-level back then was Vlad Radmanovich. And what they were able to do, you know, they drafted wisely with, you know, with Marc Gasol, thank God for them, you know, because otherwise they were trading away most of their picks. So if you look historically on what the organization has done, obviously getting a big is a huge thing. But I think that when it comes to acquiring assets, they go after the best player available and not necessarily team fit, because nobody knows what this team's going to look like. I don't know how many guys from last year's team will still be on it in 2 years. And, you know, and I don't think more than three of them will.
All right,
I've been saying two guys basically will be on this team long term. I mean, it's Julius Randle and Jordan Clarkson. I don't even know how much I buy into Clarkson as a like full on long term like piece that can be a starting caliber guard on a contender. I actually probably don't think he is that. I think he's more of a sixth man type. That's why, yeah, you're right. You take Okafor, you take Towns, you take whatever big guys there, and you just continue to build. Now, I don't even think that the fit with Randall is a bad fit. I think it's fine. They're going to be able to play together offensively because Randall's going to operate out of the mid-post or even like in the mid-range and just try to attack, or hopefully this newfound, well, not even newfound, he's had it since high school, but this improved, consistent jump shot that he's apparently been working on throughout his injury time comes to fruition, and you know, he's able to knock down those 18-footers. That would be big for his development, and that'd be big for the Lakers. But yeah, I think Drew's right. I think that you take the best player available here, and you just continue to build your franchise around what you hope is a franchise piece, but maybe it just ends up being a guy that is very talented and you can get another better piece for.
Without knowing the possibilities of what they could be traded for or turned into, because I think we're just looking at them. There's really no way to know what direction the Lakers could go with that. So it's,
right.
If they decide to go with Okafor, I do agree that it can work, But it's just you're basically turning yourselves into a younger version of the Memphis Grizzlies, and is that something?
I don't think that's true.
With the two bigs, you're relying on interior passing. You're going to have to get shooting to surround them with, and they're not going to be as good defensively as the Grizzlies are.
I think,
no point guard like
fine defensively.
Oklahoma,
I think so.
Yeah, like I think those two are going to be fine defensively together. I mean, Okafor is not going to be Marc Gasol defensively, but I think they're going to be fine defensively together. Like I've been saying throughout this podcast, the tenure of this podcast, that I don't think Okafor is as bad defensively as he gets credit for. I think that he's generally just a guy who didn't really give a lot of effort because Duke needed him to stay out of foul trouble. I think that once he starts giving effort with his wingspan, with his nimble feet, he'll be okay in the same way DeMarcus Cousins is okay on that end. He's actually pretty solid on that end now, even if it takes a couple years. So I think you're going to be fine. I think that Randall operates a little bit differently than Zach Randolph does, in that, yeah, Randolph can do that mid-post stuff, but he's still mostly a post player. Julius Randle's going to be, his strength is that mid-post range. He's going to do that that face-up stuff a lot more, where he tries to get to the bucket off of that. He's going to try and probably shoot some more mid-range jumpers. He's a little bit more of a weapon in the pick and roll, I would think, than Zach Randolph has turned into. So I think it's going to be different than what Memphis is.
But it's inverted a little bit. So Okafor's more Randolph, and Gasol is more Randall then. Because Gasol's working at the high post and making the passes, so it's kind of switched even though the positions don't match up.
I think there's a third option. And that third option is Randall Jeff Green, and is somebody else going to be, and is somebody else Zach Randolph? Because I think, you know, not only has Randall lost a lot of weight, but, you know, the Lakers had two of the best kind of hybrid 3-4 guys over the last, yeah, you know, as far as championship teams are concerned, with both Ori and Lamar Odom. And I think Randall is a pretty good ball handler. He's lost a lot of weight since he got hurt last year. I don't know if you saw that video of him working out before a game earlier towards the end of the season. And I'm not saying he's going to be primarily be the three, but I can see situations where he will play the three, he will play the four, and he can bring the ball up. If they end up, you know, if Clarkson is their point guard, starting point guard next year, and who's not a great traditional point guard, I can see them having an offense where multiple guys, especially, you can't have a team with Kobe on it, where, you know, and expect that you're sorry. Hold on. I don't know why radio just went off.
we like some beats mixed in on the podcast. It's all right.
It's funny. Clock radio. And then, I can see him playing some small forward, and maybe that's what they asked him to do. And because it really depends. Look, this is a very strange offseason for free agency, because you kind of have to spend money. You don't have to overpay guys, but you kind of have to spend money because you're going to lose it next year, in a sense. You know, because, I mean, yeah, you could roll it over, but if you're the Lakers and you're going off of these last 2 years, and this is what you're considering Kobe's last year, there are guys that kind of fit for now and the future that they can go out and spend. But it would make sense for them to keep acquiring assets, just so that they, if they get a chance to go after a Durant, that they have that. And that's why, you know, that's why the Clarkson draft was so significant to them, because if you look at Boston and you look at New York and you look at some of the other teams like Philly, let's say, and not to say that, you know, Kevin Durant would be willing to go to Philly at this point, but I think that if you look at teams and we're all given a chance to provide their best package for Kevin Durant, and the Lakers leapfrog the Celtics. As many picks as the Celtics have in terms of players, you know, the best player, if the best player the Celtics can offer is Marcus Smart at this point, and the Lakers can offer Julius Randle, let's say, because they were unwilling to trade Okafor, whoever it is they end up taking with the pick, and they can throw Clarkson on that and throw in, you know, two picks, whatever it is, as long as, you know, that's enough to satisfy in Oklahoma City or their fan base, knowing that they would lose Durant anyways, let's say, or, you know, so just the idea that he compensated for the loss of Randall, just in terms of having somebody that provided them with hope. And so I think that the Lakers wouldn't be afraid to to put those two guys, Randle and Okafor, on the floor at the same time, and wouldn't be afraid to go after one of the potential bigs in free agency and see if there's a way that they can make all three guys work together.
Yeah, that's kind of what I think, too. Like, a lot of people, I suggested even Kevin Love, say he opts out this year. I said, you know, I don't think that getting number two really affects their chase of Kevin Love, because even if you think that Julius Randle's a four, like, you think he's a pure four, which I tend to side on that. I think that he might struggle a little bit to defend threes. I think that he's quick, but he's not, like, coordinated like a three is to play the perimeter full time. I think that even if you think he's a four, then he's still going to be able to play 28 minutes a game next year. Even
sure.
If you bring in Kevin Love. Like, that, and that's fine. You know? So, I even say that you're worried about the fit with Okafor, say you're worried about the fit with Randle. There are enough ways that this roster can go, enough different ways, that you just take the best player and then you build around that guy and you build around Randle and you just make it work, because there just isn't any talent on this team, and there's especially not any talent going into their 16-17 cap sheet. They have $5 million committed right now, let's say eight if you include the Randle option, which I'm sure they'll pick up. Then they'll have to pay Clarkson a little bit because his contract is non-guaranteed for next year, which they'll obviously pick up, and then he's a free agent after that. So, you know, it's just not – like, you're going to have at most – say you have to – say Clarkson blows up this year and you have to pay him $10 million. You're going to have $15 or $18 million on your cap sheet whenever the salary cap is what – 189 million, something like that. So even if you go out, you try and get a max guy, even if you go out and get a Chris Middleton for 13 million this year, you still should go out and use your cap space this year, because there's just going to be so much of it next year for the Lakers.
There's going to be so much of it for every team that you
have. That's the thing.
And there's going to, I don't under, like, this is what I'm thinking, like, how, like, teams are just going to be sitting there with cap space, and, like, they might want to spend it, but there's not going to be enough players to spend it on.
This way, the Lakers, though, will have space for two max guys in 2016-17. Most teams will not have space for two max guys, I would guess.
Yes, or three guys.
Yeah, the max contract value is going up. So
the Lakers might have room for five max guys.
Yet again,
if 30%, there's a 30% max, of that, then this is the silver lining for the Lakers, you know, which is always sounds weird when you talk about silver linings in the Lakers, because, you know, they're one giant silver lining in terms of historically, but right now is that the new rules of the CBA affected Lakers more than any other team, and the Knicks too, because, you know, both teams were stuck with big contracts with multiple years left on them, and the rules changed for sign-in trades, and they couldn't do anything. But where it comes to an advantage for those teams is once those teams are good, they can retain the players that they have. So when I hear people on LA Sports Talk Radio talking about trading the pick, and I say to them that they're going to be paying less than $10 million for the next two seasons, or at least next season, for, let's say, Clarkson, Randle, and hypothetically Okafor, and then you still have this cap space, why in the world would you trade that luxury for a guy who most likely would only have 1 year left on his contract before he can become a free agent and leave like Dwight Howard did?
It's crazy. Rookie contracts are the most valuable thing right now. If you get an all-star in a rookie contract, that's probably the most valuable thing you can have in the NBA right now. And they're going to continue to get even more valuable
as
the cap goes up. Like, it's going to be crazy how valuable these things are. Just because even if in 2016 they do raise the rookie scale a little bit, it's signed through 2020, I believe, and the players union right now doesn't really have any incentive to raise rookie value or the contract value of rookies on rookie deals. Even if they raise that a little bit, they're still going to be insanely valuable just because of the increased cap space. Like, it's going to be nuts.
Here's the question. Is it in a way, aren't the Lakers better off being horrible again and stacking up another top three pick? They can keep it if it falls in the top three.
Yeah, but of course. But at the same time, Yeah, and that's when a team like Oklahoma City's situation a few years ago and the Lakers is different. Whereas, you know, Oklahoma City reached a point where they stacked up all these high lottery picks and then they couldn't afford to keep them all. And you never want to be in that position. But at the same time, even if you're the Lakers and you can afford to keep all of them, you also don't want to have to make decisions on guys when you might not know what you have yet and make those types of commitments to guys and paying them that much money for so many years when you're paying on potential instead of past performance. So, you know, if you're let's say Oklahoma City had never made the two trades they made, right? And they kept Jeff Green, so they never got Kendrick Perkins, and they kept Harden. And so everything else has played out in the way it really has. Well, they'd be paying, you know, how much at this point? Over $120 million to those five guys. And one of them missed the season due to injury. One of them, Jeff Green, ended up having heart surgery. You know, and is the most, you know, hit or miss player from game to game, maybe in the league. So, you know, so you never want to have that headache where you're forced with having to decide whether or not you know, keep guys around. That's why I wouldn't be opposed to them moving the 28th pick in this year's draft, because, you know, I don't see much of a difference between between 27 and a second round pick. And I don't think there has been much of a difference historically. And the second round pick, you can get restricted in 2 years and not have to worry about extending, you know, with the big money in after his third or fourth season.
Well, that cuts both ways, though, because in this, again, the thing I just noted with rookie salary being a very, very valuable thing, if you hit on one of those picks, what's going to happen is you're going to be locked into that guy for 4 years as opposed to two. So
sure.
That's going to be a very, very valuable contract for you. Especially over the next two drafts, where 2015 and 2016, we know the rookie scale isn't changing. We know that you're going to be paying those guys like $4 million over the course of 4 years. If you hit on that pick, it's incredibly valuable.
But look at Oklahoma City, because, you know, they had kind of had to make a choice between Harden and Ibaka. And what they did was they rushed to re-sign Ibaka, which was, you know, which wasn't a bad idea. Because they probably felt that we should keep the starter who's, you know, the big around, as their priority. And then they had no choice, or they did have a choice, but they ultimately decided that it would be in their best interest, even though it proved to be wrong, to move Harden. And so the Lakers wouldn't have had to make that choice financially, but if you had a player who you still – like the Lakers had that choice, had that problem with Bynum when Bynum missed the 2008 season and – his agent came out and said that he was offended that the Lakers hadn't, you know, made him an offer just yet. And they were smart, and they ended up getting him to sign, I think, a three-year deal with a fourth-year team option. And this was under the rules of the old CBA. So they were able to trade him before the deal was up. But that worked out for them because they ended up winning the championship the next 2 years. And he got hurt in one of those 2 years, even though he made it to both finals. So, you know, you never want to be stuck having a player that doesn't have the value in a trade that you want. But, yeah, if it works out, there's nothing better. You know, having a guy in a – look, I had a list somewhere of every championship team from, you know, basically past post-Jordan, and there was one player on a rookie contract in the starting five of every single one of those teams. You know, whether if it was, Evan George – you know, or Tayshaun Prince or Rajon Rondo, you know, I don't have the list off the top of my head, but yeah, I mean, if you have a guy that takes up 5% of your cap, you know, who's contributing starters minutes and playing, you know, 75 to 82 games a year, like you can't give that up. And if it's a guy who you took with the top two pick, like, I don't know why in the world anybody would ever think about trading that.
So Drew, the pick's going to be Okafor, right?
I think so. I mean, if I was going to bet, I would definitely say it. And because I think when it comes down to it, I can't see a situation where they have the balls to not take him.
So this is just looking at the team next year, and I'm perfectly fine with them taking Okafor. But I mean, they're going to be playing Kobe and basically two rookie big men with whoever they slot in at small forward and a second year point guard. That team's defense next season. I know, Sam, you think they're going to be fine long term.
Oh, it's going
to
be
but
disaster.
Next season, as I mean, that team is going to be really freaking bad next year unless they do something in free agency that I don't expect this year because I don't think...
I think that them going out and getting a guy like Chris Middleton is pretty...
That's not saving that defense.
Oh, no. Nothing is saving that defense next year. It's going to be an abomination. But if you go out and get a guy for Chris Middleton on a $450 contract, that's going to be a good contract going into the future. That's a guy that fits well with your two big men because he can shoot and he can defend multiple positions. And... It just makes you generally better in the long run. It makes you better fit for some of these other guys that are going to come up, some of these other free agents that are going to come up. It makes you a more valuable place there. And I don't think he's a guy, or I don't think pretty much anyone, like say Danny Green, say someone in that ilk, is taking them out of a potential top three pick anyway, to be honest. Like, this team's just going to be that bad next year. It is what it is. If I was the Lakers, I would try and go out and get one guy, probably not two guys, unless I can get a superstar.
Yeah, I mean, there are some guys that some teams might not be willing to match on. Like, you know, Cleveland's got, all of a sudden, based on playoff performances, Cleveland's going to have a really difficult summer. And, I mean, LeBron's going to be the one dictating what they're going to do. But
yeah,
all of a sudden, you're going to have JR probably opting out because he can and he knows that he's going to have them by the balls.
Yeah.
And now Dellavedova is a restricted free agent who all of a sudden looks like, you know, somebody who's going to get an overpaid offer sheet from somebody with cap space who doesn't, you know, who wants to have it this year, unless he decides to accept a tender and hit free agency next year. But even then, I don't know what the incentive for him to do that, because if he gets a chance to start somewhere, you know, who doesn't
want
to start?
He's not getting the chance to start somewhere.
I mean, the position's never been this deep, but you know, the thing is that if you looked at the other thing Kupchak said about Clarkson, was that he can envision him playing with another point guard, and that was his response when asked about Rondo. So he prefaced it by saying, you know, I can't comment on another team's players, but you know, when I look at Jordan Clarkson, I see a guy who can play in the same backcourt with another point guard.
Go yep, get so Rondo, please. I'm begging you guys to go sign Rondo.
Well, I mean, yeah, no, I mean, look, here's my thing is if they just wait it out. And then they offer him a 1-year, $10 million deal, you know, because nobody else is going to offer him a contract. I mean, there's no need to show up on his doorstep.
I think that's
midnight.
A horrible idea.
You can have him for 1 year, $10 million.
Nobody else under contract, and nobody else to sign with you, and you're just spending to spend.
Yeah, the reason I think that's generally a horrible idea is that I think that Rondo isn't. I think that he's suffering from Josh Smith syndrome, and that a lot of people are down on him right now. He's actually not a bad player. I think that he could make the Lakers a little bit too good next year. I think you still want to try and be in the running for a top three pick, or at least like in the bottom five of the league. If you go out and you sign Swingman, you go out and sign Rondo, you put them next to Kobe, put them next to these two big men, Nick Young, that starts to get to be like the semblance of a middle lottery team.
No, that team is still god awful.
Oh, it's bad, but that might be a 25.
Rondo
that might be a 25-win team.
The defense with Rondo, this version of Rondo, and this is from someone who I used to love Rondo, but I think the time has passed. I don't think this is Josh Smith syndrome. Smith plays power forward. I just don't know if you can have he shot 30% from the free throw line.
Well, and then you have Okafor, who's a 51% free throw shooter.
Like, I think Rondo, if they want to tank, I think Rondo's a great idea for 1 year, $10 million. I guess it would help with that. So, and if you're not doing anything long-term, it makes sense. And from that perspective, I don't think Rondo makes them a better team.
Here's my thing about them tanking. I don't think they can make the decision to tank until the season starts and they see what they've got. I don't think they can go into this season thinking, all right, let's try to keep our pick, because that's just, you know, the only way to guarantee that pick is by finishing with, you know, one of the worst two records, right? That's the only way to get a
with
top
the worst
well,
one.
No, they can't guarantee their pick next year.
Yeah.
Well, like, no, they literally can't, because they can, even if you have the first
they
pick
fall
or
to four.
The
oh, yeah, one
odds,
falls
fall
to four.
Four.
That's right.
Yeah. So in that respect, it would be stupid not to exercise all options, even in season, knowing that they have a $25 million expiring contract that they can always,
right,
you know, help somebody with and try to jumpstart their rebuild with.
But expiring.
And then there's the Orlando pick that they have to give 2 years after they convey that pick to Philly.
That was the biggest part of them getting the number two pick, or at least keeping their pick this year, because 2016 is a bad draft. 2017 is a very good draft.
Yeah.
They're probably going to want to convey that pick in 2018. And they're lucky that they're going to now, most likely. I think the Lakers, honestly, should probably, the more I think about it, they probably should try and convey it next year. So you're right that, I guess, that you wouldn't want to tank next year.
I wonder if they had the option with Houston. I wonder if Houston gave them the option of in that Jeremy Lin trade, of having a pick in 2015 or 2016. And if they chose 2015 because they were afraid they might lose their pick this year and wanted to have a pick in this year's draft, and if they had the option to get another pick, you know, for 2016, that would have given them the flexibility to trade their pick the year before or after it, potentially, or at least to trade, you know, the worst of two picks, like the Bargnani pick.
Yeah, that wasn't particularly farsighted, I guess, on their part. They probably could have done that a little bit better. It's an interesting situation for the Lakers. They can go a lot of different ways. The more I think about it, the more I think I agree with you that they should probably go into the season hoping not to tank. But yeah, it's probably an eventuality.
The example that I give everybody in terms of what you want to do to kind of jumpstart a rebuild is to just kind of, you don't want to suck, and you want to give off the impression that you're at least headed in the right direction. And I always talk about Westbrook's injury in the playoffs 2 years ago, where, you know, he gets hurt. Houston ends up going 7 games with Oklahoma City when they probably would have got swept or lost in 5 games otherwise. The Lakers end up getting swept because they're, you know, not a good team, but also everybody got hurt. The offseason starts. Dwight takes meetings with Golden State, who, you know, seemed like a team going nowhere but needed to pull strings if they wanted to acquire him. He meets, you know, obviously with the Lakers because they were the incumbent team. And then he meets with Houston, who, had it not been for the fact that Westbrook got hurt, Houston finished with the 8th seed. The Lakers were the 7th seed. And it wasn't like there was a ton of talent on that roster outside of Parsons and Harden to make Dwight think, that's the team I'm going to go to. But if we're looking at the standings, and the standings have a green arrow pointing up or a red arrow pointing down for which direction teams are going in, that green arrow pointing up for Houston was a little bit misleading because they almost missed the playoffs. They came dangerously close to missing the playoffs. I mean, they had a pretty good run during the season, but then they almost fell apart completely. And and by the way, another guy on that team, restricted free agent, Patrick Beverley, who I wonder if the Lakers would consider spending money on because their defense is going to be so bad.
Yeah, entirely possible.
He's a way better fit than Rondo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And initially taken with a Laker draft pick that was sold to Miami. I'm sure Miami regrets losing him more than the Lakers do.
I would think so. So we're going Okafor with this pick, correct?
Yes.
Okafor is the official pick.
All right.
That's the pick.
You got anything you want to get out there, Drew?
No. Follow me on Twitter, Drew Onga. That's really it for now. I'm going to definitely do more writing in the off season than I did during the season, just family and work-related obligations. So look out for that. And, I'm appearing on a podcast here and there, and you can find that out via Twitter.
Drew, thank you very much. All right, so we got the Lakers with Jahlil Okafor, and that wraps up this edition of the Amateur Hour podcast. We'll be back with the 76ers up next at the third pick.